Hi, and welcome to another episode of Inside Wentworth. I'm Caleb Cochran. Today, my guests are Cliff Stoltz, founder and creative director of Stoltz Design, and DJ Moore, associate director of admissions communications at Wentworth. Today's podcast is the second in a two-part series called Building a Brand. In the first episode, I spoke with Neil Kane, president of Libretto, and DJ Moore. Wentworth worked with Cliff and Stoltz Design on the visual components of our new brand, which launched in 2014. Today we'll talk about that project as well as college and university branding and visual identity in general. For more information about Stoltz Design, visit www.stoltz.com. That's STOLTZE. And for more information about the Wentworth brand project, visit wit.edu/media. So here we go with this episode.
From Wentworth Institute of Technology in Boston, welcome to Inside Wentworth.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Inside Wentworth. I'm Caleb Cochran, Director of Communication, Marketing, and Public Relations at Wentworth Institute of Technology in Boston. Today I'm here with DJ Moore, Associate Director of Admissions Communications at Wentworth, and Cliff Stoltz, Creative Director and Founder of Stoltz Design. So Cliff, I wonder if we could start by just telling us a little bit about Stoltz Design, the kind of work you and your team do, and particularly what you guys do with colleges and universities.
Yeah, sure. First of all, welcome to our Fort Point studio here. Hopefully we don't hear too much of the rain coming off the skylight over us. It's a little windy out there right now. I am the founder, creative director of Stoltz Design, a graphic design studio here in Fort Point. I've been in the Fort Point ever since the beginnings of this business, originally over on Ultra Street, and happy to be here still after all these years. It's really is part of our DNA. So we are a graphic design studio that has really kind of broadened the definition of what design is as far as where we started and where we are right now. We have a wide range of clients, including MIT, the Davis Museum at Wellesley, Harvard Law School, those are educational institutional clients, but then we also do work for financial organizations like Fidelity. We've done a lot of work with high-tech companies. Cakewalk is one that we did work for many years. And we also do work for the publishing world and even the entertainment industry with clients in New York and on the West Coast. So it's a pretty broad range of stuff. Being in Boston, it's really hard to be a designer here and never get involved with educational clients because it's just a mecca here.
Yeah.
And there's so many of them. Really good institutions and good work to be done for that. I think some of my earlier work were for some art schools like Mass Art. I was doing all their work for about 14 years starting in the early 90s, but also doing work for Northeastern and Harvard and some of these other clients from way back. But it really has turned into a big part of our client base. Not just because of the convenience, but it really is something that we like to do. The people that we work with there are interesting, and it's a good mission. And so we find ourselves attracted to these kind of clients and these kind of projects quite a bit. And what's different now from when we first started is that schools have a much better idea of what they need to do on as far as branding efforts.
Yeah.
I clearly remember our projects back in the late 80s and early 90s just being these one-off view book, and the view book would be a standalone piece, didn't need to look like anything else they did all year.
Right.
It was not, they didn't have a real brand or a look. And so things got a little more interesting once they started looking at things more holistically.
And talk a little bit about how you got involved in the Wentworth branding project and what was appealing about that.
Well, we received an RFP for a suite of admissions materials, and it looked like a very interesting project in that there were just so many different pieces as part of the system, mostly print. We also an environmental graphics, signage or banners and things like that, but also that there was a digital component as well. And so the project did have some strings attached initially where there was some research that had been done and there was some basic, I guess, directives on some of the high level messaging and even some the start of some design guidelines. And it wasn't clear to us at first as how closely we'd have to stick to those guidelines that had been prepared. But we thought even if we did, there was a good start to that stuff and we could make it a lot better, but we could work with it. As it turns out, once we got the project, it turned out that there was a lot more flexibility than we initially thought in terms of where we could take it next, and that was a very good thing as far as we were concerned.
Yeah. So I wasn't really around for that those early stages of the project, but both of you were. DJ, you were too. So can you talk a little bit about the visual side of that project, the beginnings of the visual side of that project, and how you know, working with the sort of the written expressions that Neil Kane and his team at Libretto came up with to create the visual expression of the brand. And maybe, DJ, you want to have some thoughts about that, too.
Sure. Cliff, do you want to start with the visual?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up Libretto because I want to mention that, you know, when we first got that proposal, it was obvious that there was not just visual design needed. There was messaging and copywriting involved, and so Librello's a frequent collaborator with ours, and they're a perfect partner for this. So we invited them to be part of our proposal for this project. So where we, I guess, just thinking back about how it worked, there was some discovery that happened early on where we get familiar with the school and Libretto, and Stolz Design participated in that. We were learning about the school in terms of what the assets were. Visually, there's always been some interesting stuff happening with the design of the various pieces. So Wentworth already kind of understood the importance of that and had a history of it. We saw an opportunity, though, to make it into something that had a little bit more of excitement and variety from piece to piece. And so we started looking at ways that we could build on what had been done before but add new things to it. Libretto also, you know, early on started to get involved with the tagline and how to refer to the five pillars that had been already established by the research firm. They're the ones who came up with the idea of it being five factors. And so, and what we did with that is we started to explore how we could take the five factors and turn that into a visual, an infographic, or something that could be used to explain that. And it really didn't start off... First of all, I would say that the work that we did initially started off as just admissions materials.
Right.
The vision at that point wasn't to rebrand the institution, but it was to redesign the admissions suite of materials. But it was during that exploration that we started to develop things that, in particular, there's a W that we developed to represent the five factors that started to catch on. We realized that it had the potential to be not only used on the admissions materials, but become kind of a secondary identity or logo for the school. And I have to say that at that point, when we started feeling that traction, we also realized, oh, maybe we can question some of these other things, like the typefaces that were being used with the old shield. Initially, that was off the table for at least for a short time, but once starting to see how this stuff could evolve and other things that were happening, it didn't take much convincing that we could make that look better, too. So in the end, we ended up with a whole identity, a kit of parts that we're using on these admissions materials that actually could be used on many other things as well. And that led us to doing a whole style guide for the school and seeing it incorporated into many other aspects, the banners, environmental signs. Catherine, my design director here, mentioned the other day walking through the campus and even noticing how not only everything seems very nicely branded now, and not only as far as the signage and the banners and the other graphics around, but even the plantings and the chairs are yellow, red, and orange. And so there's a lot of there's, I mean, that didn't, we didn't implement all that, but there's, it's all coming together in a very well-branded institution with that shows a lot of professionalism.
Yeah. Yeah, and I want to talk a little bit more about that W in a minute, but DJ, do you want to talk a little bit about the early stages of those admissions materials once you kind of had that material from Stoltz and Libretto and how you moved forward with that?
Yeah, definitely. As Cliff said, we had previously some strong visual print material that we'd been working with for quite a while in admissions, and with this, it started off as creating a new fleet of admissions material, but it was the intention to have that as the kind of soft launch to the rebranding. So I think with what Cliff and his team developed visually, along with Libretto's messaging, it just, for me, it really captured what those five factors were about and what Wentworth's about. And I was lucky enough to be involved from the very start and see kind of the evolution of Cliff's work, and we tried a couple different things with this, and you know, we like these, but we also have these, and it was we'll talk a little bit more about that when we get to the W, but I've just, in the almost 3 years we've been working with Stoltz now, it's always been one of my favorite aspects of working with them, to see the visual ideas that they come up with and kind of how they get from that point of inspiration, I guess, to what we end up with as the finished product. And I've always liked the attention to detail that Cliff and really every member of his team I've worked with bring to just every aspect of what they do.
Yeah,
it's important, I think, just to use that as an opportunity to touch on the fact that it's a team here. It's a team effort. I operate as a creative director, but Kyle Nelson contributes a lot. Brian Azer, Dave Chi, and Mary, as our project manager, Mary Ross, is a very good, well-oiled machine that gets the stuff done very quickly when we need to. And the other thing, I know I jumped ahead to talk about the W, but there are other aspects of an overall identity and brand that came out of those materials too, not just the W, but the use of black and white photography with the silver is one thing. You know, actually thinking about one of the big changes we did to your publications was we went with gloss paper and in some cases with a matte laminate with spot gloss on it, and you know, for us, that it's not even what we typically do, but it just seemed right for Wentworth and for the technology and innovation messages that were being pushed forward. It actually made them stand out in a crowd when you look at their materials versus others. And you know, we mentioned the typography and the color palette. But then there was also this element of a color bar that is on the edge of a lot of pieces. And that's inspired by stuff that had been done prior to our getting involved. And there were some kind of vertical stripes of red, yellow, and black that was done by the previous design studio. And we liked that, but we thought it needed to change up and be used differently. So we turned it into more of a dynamic color bar that... that could, in some cases, be animated or varied, but it's always kind of a constant element that you could just use on various pieces, and it's just one more component that identifies it as part of that series or part of Wentworth's publications.
So, I'm interested in this a lot too. As a magazine editor, I'm thinking a lot about paper and printing and that sort of thing. So, talk a little bit more about that. You're talking about the gloss paper, for instance. So, is that just how do you know when something is the right fit, or is it just experimentation, or is it just you've been doing this so long that you know when it strikes you what's going to work? Or I'm just curious a little bit about that.
I mean, there are a lot of factors, and you're right, and part of it is doing it a long time and getting to experiment. Like, even just using silver ink I wouldn't say it's highly experimental, but it's not necessarily commonplace either, and there are things that you have to know about how silver ink will behave on a sheet of paper with black and white halftones, and there's a lot of actually kind of working back and forth with the printer to make sure they understand what you're looking for. Yeah. So there's that came with a lot of experience of having worked with metallics in the past. The paper, I like to think it's, we're always thinking about what is right for the client, and I think that's largely true, but there are also trends in design, and right now the trend is uncoated paper.
Yeah.
It's there's better quality printing available for uncoated paper now than there used to be, and you used to have to, if you wanted to go uncoated, you might have to suffer a little bit with the impact and the color of the color images, and but now we have printers that we work with that can do a beautiful job on uncoated paper. So that wasn't really an obstacle, but there's still a difference between the impression you get when you're looking at something that is on uncoated paper from when you look at something that's on coated, glossy. And, you know, I think that for a while the pendulum had swung to not looking too slick or
yeah.
corporate, and that was one of the reasons why schools moved away from it. But it's become so ubiquitous that for the uncoated paper, that going back to using glossy and shiny on your materials really did make a impact.
Yeah,
and it's something that we'd never really experimented with in our publications before, and just seeing the difference. I mean, I always defer to Cliff when it comes to what type of paper we should use and what piece, but just seeing the difference between that gloss, I don't know if it's a gloss matte on the viewbook cover that helps the W pop out from the silver versus the cover of the travel brochure where in that case it's a image, the black and white image on the silver that Cliff was speaking about earlier. And I mean, that's where I think Cliff's keen eye comes into play with this. And you would hope as a designer, any designer would have a keen eye, but I've seen Cliff at a printing press and seen the silver photo come off and him immediately say, yeah, that's not right. and then work with the printing press to get it exactly where it needs to be to have that silver pop that brings the image to life.
Yeah, I mean, it is a fun thing, and it is something that, you know, these days, designers we'll talk a little bit more about digital side of things pretty soon, but designers really do need to know, some designers need to know both print and digital. But there are a lot of designers who are out there doing branding, and they're mostly doing digital, and they are not aware of the refinements that you can make with printing and using spot colors instead of process mixes and lots of things that can enhance a piece. And so that is something that, just because of the years I've been doing this, that I have a lot of experience and I've heard a couple of designers mention that here who are on staff, is that one of the reasons they like working here is that they learn a great deal about that side of the business from what they had done in previous jobs.
So let's talk a little bit about that W. So basically, for our listeners who haven't seen it, and Cliff can explain it better than I can, but it's essentially five diamonds that make up a W, and that nicely are able to kind of embody the five factors of career success that we talk about so often. So Cliff, why don't you tell us a little bit about kind of the origin of how that design came to be, and then how you've used it not only in these original admissions materials we've been talking about, but it's really taken on kind of a life of its own since then, and we use it in a lot of different ways.
Right. Yeah. So we were trying to come up with a way to kind of hold these five factors together as a unit, and there was earlier exploration of just using them in squares and a checkerboard of squares or in a row of squares or that kind of thing. And you know, I at some point it occurred to me that there are five endpoints in a W. There's four lines, and they all intersect, which means there's a total of five endpoints, and maybe we can make the five squares into a W. And we were experimenting with squares, meaning upright squares, and how
yeah.
we could do that. And it just wasn't, you know, we had to have some lines connecting them or something. You know, it was just not clicking until suddenly, I think it was Dave, it was somebody here that all of a sudden turned the the square on its side, and then all of a sudden they fit together, and hey, that's the W. So it was like one of those eureka moments that, okay, yeah, we can do this, we can make it work. So we really liked that idea, and I still remember the first presentation where we showed some ideas without it and some with it, and
was actually going to bring that up.
Yeah, okay, maybe I'll leave that to you to talk about, but even when you think of something and you come up with something good, you still don't, maybe it's just me, I'm doing so long, I try not to get too attached to things because you never know how it's going to be received or how it's going to, you know, people are going to react to it. But we were pretty excited about it when we found it. But it wasn't just that form. Then we putting the words into it, but it gave us an opportunity to put images that related to those different factors and those could be changed up. It also kind of led us down this path of, well, we have the Wentworth colors are black and yellow, and then sometimes red is an accent color. So we have three colors, but wait a minute, there's five squares, what do we do?
Yeah.
So that's where we started to look at the blending of the yellow and red to come up with the oranges in between, and even a darker red with a little black mixed into it. And that was what gave us a basic color palette that not only works well on the W, but on lots of applications. So I think it's pretty striking. It's like, those warm colors, those hot yellow, orange, red against the black and the silver is really very identifiable as things. And even if a cover is mostly white, you have little spots of those colors. It still ties into it. You can have a dark piece that's mostly black. You could have a bright red piece, a yellow piece, but it's all part of the same system.
Yeah. And DJ, talk a little bit about how you guys have used this on different pieces. There have been some pretty interesting uses of it, from fold-out pieces that I've seen and other things. So,
I was going to bring up that first presentation. I can remember coming over to the studio to see what Cliff and his team had kind of come up with, and as soon as I saw the W, I knew that was the direction we needed to go in. And there was a few other, I think there was like kind of block formations or some other ideas that they'd come up with, but the W just immediately stood out from everything else. And I later learned that that had been their favorite too. But it was that kind of, as Cliff said, the eureka moment where, coming at this from the marketing side of things for admissions, that just visually encapsulated what we'd been working on with those five factors, and it just brought kind of this new visual flair to it for the marketing side of things. As far as how we've used it, one of my favorite aspects of the W is probably one of the more subtle ones, but we use it throughout our viewbook to mark which factor is being discussed. So if you're on cooperative learning, which is the second factor, that corresponding diamond is lit up in color at the top of the page, where the other ones are just kind of in grayscale and silver. And it's just a little detail like that, you know, some people may not even notice it, but it's just something that kind of gives that through line throughout the publication. And then I remember very early on, after Cliff and his team had come up with the W and we, you know, made it this secondary logo, we were just talking about other ways we could use it, and Cliff had really settled on this idea of trying to do a publication that was in the shape of the W.
Yeah.
And for years I'd been trying to do some kind of really cool die cut piece. So I think originally we came up with the W as a fold out piece, one square that then folds out to be in the shape of the W and highlights each factor, and we use that as our digital viewbook piece to promote the digital viewbook, where it's just the images in the W with the factors labeled and then the URL for the digital viewbook, and when you flip it over, it highlights each of the people that appear in the videos on the digital viewbook, which I think we'll talk a little bit more about that later. And then that actually led us down the line to create a second W piece, which is just a solid W, there's no folds, which is our social media insert that we put in every acceptance packet. So every time a student is accepted, they get this little W that has all of our social media outlets for admissions right on it. So it's kind of inviting them to become part of the Wentworth community now that they've been accepted to the school. And again, it's just those pieces that help reinforce that part of the brand identity. Mm-hmm. That I think it's a secondary logo, but for admissions, it really helps just put everything in that visual perspective for what the five factors are.
You hit on something interesting there. Sorry, Cliff. I was just going to say, you hit on something interesting there because you mentioned that it's the secondary logo. How was that sort of decision made by you, Cliff, or was it? And because in some ways, I think now when even internally, DJ, I think you'd agree, when people see that W, they think, okay, that's it, right? That's the logo. But it's sort of an accent to the sort of shield and type logo or a secondary one. So what are your thoughts about that, Cliff?
I would agree with DJ that when we first started to use it, we didn't want to be so presumptuous to think this was going to be the new Wentworth logo. But it's also hard to call it as a secondary logo because in most cases it takes more prominence or equal or more prominence than the traditional shield.
Yeah.
Now, we've been involved with branding for other schools where the school said they wanted a new logo, but when it came time to do away with the old seal or the old shield or the old logo, there was uproar from the traditionalists and the alumni, and so we didn't even want to go down that path at all. So we were happy to recommend keeping the shield, updating the type with it, but then you have this new thing that helps to identify it. And they're so different from each other, the traditional shield and this very minimal W, that they don't compete with each other.
Right.
They're just very different and they coexist very nicely together.
Yeah.
The exciting thing, maybe slightly difficult, is that when we first introduced the W, we thought, okay, this is the five factors W, so it should always be used to represent the idea of five factors. It's moved beyond that.
Yes, it has. Yeah.
Because it can still be used to represent the five factors, but it's also Wentworth Fund.
Yeah.
Has a version of the W. The Wentworth Alumni Association, the CIPSE.
I saw housing using it on
housing.
Something.
So there are different versions, some of which we've had a hand in implementing, others are just appearing places,
yeah.
But still it's become a thing that's beyond what we ever really thought about when we were first developing it. One of my aspirations is to someday get a sculptural dimensional version out on your front
You've
lawn.
Mentioned that with the 3DW.
So, yes.
Right in the middle of the quad.
Yeah, so that would be very cool. Or out on the what is the street again? The
side of Huntington Ave.
Yeah. So anyway, that, you know, so there's a lot, there's still, I mean, that's not going to, you know, we're not going to run out of things to do with that W.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of legs to it, so.
Yeah. So going back to talking about publications a little bit, we've worked on the last three president's reports together, which have been very successful publications. So talk a little bit about the process of designing those kinds of pieces and sort of where do you start, and then some of the key points and kind of not only those president's reports, but any kind of successful publication.
Yeah, well, we'll start with the president's reports, because one thing is that by the time we were doing the president's reports, the admissions materials had largely been done. It was,
yeah.
The first batch of admission materials happened over a course of, what, 4 or 5 months,
yeah.
Over a summer, and then we got to work on a president's report. And so part of what we were doing with the president's report is looking to do something that we related well to the brand, but also changed it up a little bit. So you didn't just see it as another piece of it, admissions material. So we were, you know, so we've been looking for ways to use the color palette, use the typefaces, use the W, but do it in a way that's a little different from what we're doing it elsewhere. The president's report is about, you know, it's about honoring those who are giving to. Things are happening there and innovative things are happening, but also to honor those who are giving to the institution. And so we wanted it to to show some level of excitement, but also kind of really sort of a professional, almost, you know, combine that with a kind of professional traditional treatment, so it looked authoritative and like you're not wasting money with the money
right.
that's being given. So for instance, we're using a little more of the serif typeface in those publications. We actually looked at, I think the first year we did it on coated paper. Then the second year we actually reverted to uncoated paper for that piece
yeah.
as a way to differentiate it from some of the other literature. But we had some very nice printing done for that. A lot of the photos are of people in it, so you're combining images of people that are being written about and images of things that they're involved in, along with just incorporating color and typography. And then, you know, the most recent one, it was particularly interesting, I think, because we had done a coated paper one where the W had been exploded on the outside, and then, you know, and then it came together on the inside to talk about the five factors. Second one, it was just a W with photos inside of it, or one continuous photo inside of the W. And then the third time we used it, we actually die cut it out of a cover,
right.
out of a yellow and red image. And what you saw through was the black and silver image of the campus coming through the squares that were cut out of the cover stock. And that was on the coated shiny paper. So you had both things going on. You had the nice soft uncoated paper that you held in your hand, and then plus the high sheen of the coated coming through.
And that was really spectacular. I mean, we saw it in the various phases. You don't really get a sense with the PDF and the different, you know, even when
yeah,
you print it out.
Prints,
yeah, laser print along the way. You're like, okay, this looks cool. But then when you finally see the final thing, I mean, it was just
yeah,
really
the contrast
pretty amazing.
Of the uncoated outside to the coated
yeah.
inside makes a difference. I was really happy with how that is evolved. And again, you know, the format went from vertical to horizontal. The typography stayed pretty consistent, which is appropriate for something like that. Why have to reinvent the wheel each time you're changing the format?
Right.
But a lot of things can stay familiar and a constant with that. So I think it's been a nice series. I like showing that. I should also say that when you do a project like that, you know, one of the first things that we try to do is brainstorm about what's the concept? What's the, is there a theme that we're trying to project about these things? And a lot of times it has been, you know, hearkening back to the innovation in the making and variations of that, which is just, you know, a great tagline. Again, I think just like the W, that was initially developed as the theme of the admissions materials, and it works so well that it's become a tagline
yeah.
being used for other things for the school as well. But you know, we'll think about that, and then we work with Libretto to develop an outline of what the content's going to be. We start to develop a book map, sometimes in partnership with Libretto, where we think about, okay, we can say this here, we can talk about this here. So it's really starting in a wireframe or schematic kind of format initially. Then we start doing sample spreads and show the client how these things could start to look. And we try
right.
to show several ideas applied to a cover and a couple sample spreads to kind of get put some options out there and get some reactions to those. And sometimes we just choose one and we go with it. Other times it ends up being a combination of things that we like from the various ideas all put into one. And at that point, we're very open to how it can go. But then once it's on a path and you've chosen it, then it becomes, easier in that you know what you're going to do with it, but sometimes harder because you have different kinds of information that you have to make work with that
right.
theme and that format and that approach. And that's where it, but that's the fun part.
Yeah, yeah. So since you started Stoltz Design, obviously the digital side of communications has become a lot more prevalent. So tell us a little bit about how you and Stoltz Design have kept up with those changes, and then how sort of the work that you've done for colleges has changed over the years as colleges and universities are changing the way they communicate with their various audiences. And DJ, I'm sure you've got some thoughts on that too.
Sure.
Yeah, well, I mean, I like the sentiment that if you don't like change, you'll like irrelevance even less. And so, you know, it's really like when I look at the 30 years I've had my studio, we didn't even have computers when I first opened the door. We were doing things with, you know, overlays of acetate and ruby lith, and we had big windows with let lots of light in, and then all of a sudden we had to buy a computer. In like 89 is when we bought our first Apple computer, and we started typesetting, and all of a sudden we needed shades on all the windows and had to make the place look a lot darker. So but it, you know, so there has been a lot of change, but it's not like there was a sudden point where it changed.
Yeah,
it's just been
right.
This like nonstop every year there's something new that you can do or change with it. And so it was probably around the late 90s, early 2000s that we started to get involved in websites. And not because I necessarily wanted to, but I felt like we had to.
Yeah.
Like, the reason I didn't necessarily want to is it was so limiting back then. I thought it was kind of like I thought reverting to designing yellow pages or something like that. It was just like, so, you know, it was all about information. You couldn't do much with images, size, and everything, and you couldn't, it was hard to refine things to the degree that we were used to with print.
Yeah.
But we also realized that we needed to know how to do this in order to compete for the larger branding projects. And so we went, you know, it was a good 5-year period of, like, you know, print designers trying to do web design and trying to figure out why our theories of print design don't apply to the web. And it's, you know, it's not a linear thing. It's very non-linear in terms of how you react to getting information in a website, and it's, it becomes much more a very different user experience. So we learned, you know, at the expense of some of our earlier clients, how to do that, and we got better at it. But I can say at this point of the game now, where we have very strong capabilities through the people that we've hired that are very talented in that area and the partners that we've had for development, we often will lead the whole web or interactive project from start to finish, but we can... we'll take on the strategy, we'll take on the design, and bring it through to production, but then we will work with a developer. We don't try to have developers on staff here because we feel that there are so many different ways that you can go, different kinds of CMSs. We'd rather determine what the best solution is going to be and find a developer that's a specialist in that.
Yeah.
And so we have a number of different ones that we work with on a regular basis. So that's, it's actually been, and now we're at a point where clients will often come to us and they'll say, oh, we saw this website that you did and we'd like you to do our website. And I said, oh yeah, well, who's doing, oh, we have somebody else doing our print work. And they didn't even know we did print, you know, so we still do projects that are print based. Projects that are print and web are kind of the ideal fit for us because we have both those capabilities, but there's a lot of projects we get here that are only digital, and it's interesting. I have to say, it's like I started by saying it wasn't very interesting, but with the bandwidth and what you can do with motion graphics and the whole, you know, kind of updatability of that compared to print, you know, the way that you can keep changing the content on it is just such a different experience that it makes it very interesting. I think the only thing I still don't like about websites is that they don't last as long. Like, we do a print piece. We have it. I have print pieces from 25 years ago I still love to look at. What happened to our websites from the early 90s?
Yeah.
That were late 90s and early 2000s? It, you know, there's nothing except for a kind of static image somewhere of what that used to look like. So that's the sad thing, I think, about interactivity. So.
And DJ, you've been at Wentworth for what, 12 or
almost
so?
Almost 13 years.
Almost 13 years. So how has it changed on your end, the digital piece of communication?
Dramatically. Yeah. just from the early days, and I think I spoke a little bit about this in the last episode, talking with Neil. I mean, when I started, we were doing paper applications. We had an online application, but we were still doing a lot of paper applications for students to apply with. And I think that was the first thing that kind of was sunsetted, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
And we moved towards a strictly online application. And, you know, there were enhancements to the website over the years, but I think it was really kind of the rise of social media with that brought along a whole new way that we had to look at digital communications, and which I think our use of social media to communicate with not only prospective students, but prospective students' families, and even current students, with not so much the admissions office, but I think as the Institute kind of got behind that social media push. And I think all of that led to when we started this project with Cliff, we knew we wanted a digital view book. That was something that at that point we had to have. We were kind of behind the times by not having it. But I think the cool thing about that part of the project was there wasn't much directive on what it needed to be. Right. So we got to shape a lot of that with Cliff and his team and Neil's team at Libretto with the writing they did for it and the messaging. And that kind of just really took shape with what we'd done through the print pieces and what we kind of wanted to do with a digital view book.
But I mean, part of what drove that, I think, well, there are a number of things, but one is that you were going to have this new brand, and you knew it wasn't going to appear on the Institute site for a while, because that takes a while. So it'd be great, first of all, to have something digital that reflected that. And also that you had this, we started with the print view book, and that's where the basic content was developed.
Right.
But you needed to have, I think you said right from the start, we want a digital view book, but if I remember correctly, it may have not even been in the first RFP, but then was added.
I think you're right. Yeah, it was something that we.
So it was during the discussions with possible partners on that project that it became it was determined that you needed that, and I do remember at the time we looked and we found some pretty nice examples, but very few schools that were doing something like what we thought about doing, which was. It's basically a pretty shallow site. It's shallow in terms of it's not very deep and layered, and lots of information. It's basically the information from the view book, but it also has the advantage of being able to have motion on it as well. So in the interactivity of the graphics, the scrollability, and using parallax. On longer pages, so you can get kind of a layered feel. But and then in particular, we were able to just go beyond just having a quote from a student to having a whole interview
or
profiles,
the
videos that were produced, and that really makes it into something that's special and unique to be able to do that within the context of this admissions focused piece. So. That was exciting for us. It was really the first time we've worked on a suite of admissions materials where the digital view book was part of that entire effort and how well it matched. It was its own thing. It had to be different because it was for the screen and it was interactive, but also work nicely as far as following through with the look and feel of the other admissions materials.
Yeah, and you said special and unique in referencing the viewbook, and I think that stands out as a special and unique part of that project, I think. Because I think early on in this, I felt that I clicked working with Cliff and his team and Neil and his team at Libretto, but we had to bring in other teams to work on the digital viewbook with us, and Cliff brought in Nectar to do the web development, and then Devlo Media shot the videos for us. And it was just for me, it was kind of bringing that collaboration and partnership factor to living, breathing life as part of this project. And it was kind of an added bonus that we won an award for the digital view book, just and just seeing how all of those different pieces came together to make this, what I thought was a really unique aspect to our admissions recruitment.
Yeah.
What's the, what do you plan to get out of that in terms of life, or is it already, you're already working on the next one, the next digital view book?
We've made text edits to it, but because we've kept a lot of those videos through that W piece I spoke about earlier, we still highlight those people. But after this year, we will have to do something because some of those students have graduated. It would be nice to just refresh some of the faculty and staff that we interview on there. So, yeah, I mean, I think that was the goal, was to get like a 3-year life out of that version of it. But moving forward, I'm sure we'll come up with something equally unique to.
Yeah, I think, you know, that's the thing, is like every few years, even, I mean, you could probably stretch it out and use it even for another couple of years, but there's going to be new things that we could do with it that will be easier to do now than it was when that was done. And so we would take advantage of those newer technologies.
And I know just from conversations with you, Cliff, that there's things that we wanted to do with that first version that we, you know, those kind of backdrop videos that that we've done, we never really explored as far as we wanted to with those.
Yeah, we did a lot with the budget we had and the time that we had to do that. And there's been discussion, okay, should we fix this stuff or can we redo these things? But it's, you know, I understand the sentiment that it might be better just to, instead of spending more money on changing something that exists and is still working pretty well as it exists right now, put that money into doing the next thing.
So,
yeah.
Good. So that's really the end of the sort of the formal questions I had for you guys. But Cliff, just to kind of close it out, I'm interested. So obviously you're a very creative guy. Where do you get some of your inspiration? Artists and other designers or musicians? I know you're a big music lover.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I mean, I was going to say my inspirations come from so many different things, and but certainly art, music, and design are key components of it. I've always, I started studying fine art in college, and then I took a year off to be in a band, and between my love of fine art, of art in general, and music, the thing that steered me to study graphic design was I thought, well, maybe I can get a job designing album covers. So that's always been part of it. And so I have a huge record collection and vinyl collection. I actually did a book called 1000 Music Graphics back in 2008, and have done some traveling poster shows of collections of music posters. So that's always been an inspiration. And I actually think that these things, you know, and then design, you know, mid-century design is a very strong interest of mine too, both in terms of just my chair collection and but also just the aesthetics, the typography, pioneers like Wolfgang Weingart and Bruno Manguzzi were a couple of Piet Swart. They recently saw this really fantastic show in New York of Carl Martens, is a Dutch designer who's still doing interesting things, a very cool show of some postcards that he letterpressed at a little gallery in Soho. So that's always a big inspiration for me too. But what I think is what really is interesting when you talk about inspiration is how, with the variety of work that we do and a variety of interests, how those things cross-pollinate and how you can take ideas that you use yourself on an album cover or some other or just something that you saw in a movie or something, and that all of a sudden clicks with your ideas in this. And even the diversity of the work that we do that I mentioned before, where we do work for corporate financial organizations. You know, we did an report once and it had and the whole report looked like a Blue Note record. So, cool. So it's really nice when those things start to cross pollinate and you get ideas. You're not just looking at numbers all the time. You're looking at a lot of things as far as sources of inspiration. So, you know, that's what kind of keeps it interesting and what keeps you know, every project unique and makes me like coming to work every day. That and this amazing team that we have here too. So it's really it's a good way to make a living.
Nice. Well, thanks for taking the time on this this rainy Friday, and DJ, thank you. And we'll talk to you next time on Inside Wentworth.
Thanks for listening to Inside Wentworth. To learn more about Wentworth and read our latest news and feature stories, visit us online at www.wit.edu.